So the big revelation this weekend came from Manchester United's Erik ten Hag. He said he has one of the most dynamic and entertaining teams in the Premier League. And there we were thinking that Manchester United were struggling a bit. We're so stupid. Welcome to the Big Kickoff Football Show, in a week where Mo Salah and Jurgen Klopp have a touchline fallout. Manchester United are stunning everyone with their brand of football, and it's now a two-horse race for the Premier League. My name is Roy Shanahan, and I'm joined by David Bogle and Neil Dobbs. And Neil, Erik ten Hag stated in his press conference on Saturday that his Manchester United team are one of the most dynamic and entertaining teams in the Premier League. Have we been missing out on something this year?
I think you, as a United supporter, Roy, have definitely been missing out on something. But I don't know whether I don't judge it in the right way, because obviously they're a rival and maybe I look at them a little bit differently. But I don't see any dynamicism. I don't see any entertainment. I guess if you're a home supporter and, you know, you've had the kind of games where you're a goal or two down to Sheffield United, you come back and you win, does that go down as entertaining? It probably does. I'm sure the fans walk away happy. But as an overall kind of view of the league, that he would actually think that, you know, he's entertaining the crowd and they're giving them what they want, I think he's a million miles off the mark, because there's definitely more entertaining teams out there. But it's just interesting to hear Erik ten Hag feel that that's the football that he's delivering at the moment. There's definitely an agenda out there at the minute where there's a lot of negative press coming his way after every result, even when they win. You look at the FA Cup last week when they won, even though obviously they did it the hard way. You know, sometimes that could be slanted as they got over the line, they found a way, but the media slant was completely against that. You know, the embarrassment thing, were you embarrassed to win in that manner? But for him to come out then a week later and say that they're entertaining the masses, it kind of brings a wry smile to your face, because I just don't see it week in, week out.
Dave, the fans can't be wrong, can they? They're getting booed at half times, they're getting booed at the end of games. Not largely, because Manchester United fans will give you lots of patience, but there's times that their patience is tested in games, and you will hear a lot of aggro during games, getting them to push on. It's not in the same line as the last manager, but you can hear that sort of disgruntled feeling. But you can also, the debates in groups and forums and stuff like that, it's real divide on whether they want them to stay there. If there was entertainment and dynamic football, would that be going on?
Absolutely not. It'd be a lot more positive if, like, you know yourself, Roy, there's times where your side mightn't be the best side in the world, but you can see they're making the most of what they're trying to do, and potentially the start of something. It doesn't feel like that with United at the moment. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done, and I think that's probably why there's a bit of a divide, because there's one or two who are probably happy with one or two of the things he's done, especially the discipline side of things, and he's took on a few of the big boys. But then there's also some who are like, what the hell has he done in the last 2 years? Like, where is his little basic structure of how he wants to play? Whether he has the players or not is a different story. But I don't know. Some of his sound bites over the last few games, my instinct is I think he's just trying to impress, or is he kind of trying to keep his job, because they haven't made their mind up. And you can see that in the room. However, they are flirting and they are looking at what's out there. So he knows he has a chance, and I just can't help but feel, is that what he's trying to say? Even though, you know, it's not what you expect from a United manager, to try and impress people going, oh, it's been two good points in a row. That's not what you expect from United. However, that's their level at the moment. But I just can't help but feel, is he just trying to do whatever he can to try and appease the manager to get that one more year, to get their money and these new guys who are coming in to get a crack with a better structure? Is that why he's kind of putting them out there? However, it could be a detriment, because even they might go, if it's been real, if you're a bit more honest about how disjointed it is a little bit, and if we need to put a few things in place, they might kind of understand. It seems a bit delusional, but I think he's just going the wrong way about trying to impress, instead of maybe being a bit more honest, unless he's doing it privately. But yeah, there's a bit of a it was a bit of a head scratcher when he said how dynamic they were, because no matter what, I'd always keep an eye on United, probably because of our mates and their slaggins and the whole lot. I have barely watched United in the last couple of seasons because I've always found it fairly torturous. Even when they're 1 or 2 nil down, I don't stick with it because it's just, I've never been, like, yeah, I don't enjoy watching United matches at the moment.
No.
The dynamism is a bit of a head scratcher for me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a red flag. It's not the case. We can understand a whole load of things, Dave. We could understand that Rashford isn't firing on all cylinders. You can understand that Anthony isn't up to it. You can understand that Mason Mount wasn't a great sign. And Casemiro, you got a season out of him and maybe now he's struggling. Amrabat never really added too much to the team. Varane's legs are gone. There's a lot of stuff there that you can say.
Onana
right?
is a box of chocolates.
Onana is, he's not up to it. That's the truth. He isn't. He's or not up to it. So you can look at all these different things as a team and go, right, well, that needs to be fixed and this needs to be fixed and you probably have to get a player in there. But when you try and cover that up by saying that actually, no, what you're saying is not correct. We are actually a really, really solid, good team, one of the best in the Premier League. And the discussion every week, everywhere, bar him, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes, isn't it? You're not.
Yeah, no, but that's it. Like, and it's just, and he's been fairly consistent with this all year about, like, you know, everything's a bit positive and everything's a bit this, but, you know, look at all the leaks and the some of the malarkey that he's had with some of the lads, and I don't get it. Like, you know, what's your opinion of Chelsea? They win their game in hand, they're only 3 points behind them. So whatever your opinion of Chelsea is, it can't be much different at United. And I know a lot of people have been slagging Chelsea off. But that's where your level is. If you're trying to say, and they're in Chelsea, are incredibly unpredictable. And he's trying to say they're one of the better sides and the true how dynamic they are. You know, I for his own sake, that kind of comment is, might get him to sack more so than what's actually happening on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, I've watched Manchester United quite a lot this season. I'm watching the Burnley game. Burnley should have got something out of it. The majority of games that I see Manchester United play against other teams, the other team probably should have got something out of it. He's probably doing well to get results the way he's getting them because he hasn't exactly got the team that can go any further than he is. How do you see Ten Hag, if he stays in the job? And I'm a little bit torn by whether he should or he shouldn't stay in the job. I kind of feel that they need someone to recruit for him and get the right people in. And if he gets the right people in, I just don't think he has the right people to do whatever he wants to do. Do you think that he can do a job if the right people or players are there for him? Or is it a case that he's just struggling a bit?
Yeah, I won't say a sympathy with him, but I do look at the squad and you think, say the likes of Maguire, I definitely think he would like to move him on. You know, they had Sancho, who's a high-paid player who you can't have at the club because of one reason or another, disciplinary, or you can't get him going. Anthony you bring in for the money and then he hasn't hit the ground running. You know, there is a little bit of... I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think he's getting results at times when he's dug them out of a hole in the games where you expect your team to get results, and he has gotten results. So you do need to give him a bit of credit for that. I think he's gotten results in games where, like that, you've gone, how the hell did United draw? How the hell did they win that game when you're looking at it over 90 minutes? So from that point of view, you've got to give him a little bit of credit because I don't think he has... I think he's the resources, but he doesn't have the structure, and he definitely... has a couple of duds in that squad, and unfortunately they're at that stage of their age, of their profile and of their contract where they won't move on, and it's very difficult to get them off the books. So I think he's inherited some of that insofar as the Maguire scenario, the Sancho scenario, but then he did well. They brought in Casemiro, they brought in Anthony, they brought in Martinez, who obviously can't stay fit. So there is a little bit of what would the team be like if he could get them gaps plugged. But for the last 2 years at least anyway, I just don't see progress. So they got Champions League last year, they had a window, they had a winter window, and I just don't see, I think they have a lot of issues, Roy. I genuinely do. I think their midfield is not good enough to play through. They don't dominate possession. I've always said this about your Liverpool, your Arsenal, your City. They will be a 70-30 of possession. and they will be dominating teams. But they've players in these positions that can play from the back, that are comfortable with the ball in possession and get them forward. Man United are still playing a counter-attacking style 2 years into the Ten Hag reign, and you expect a team with the stature of United, if they want to get back to where they want to be, they need to bring in players that are good enough on the ball, that are dynamic, that can, you know, boss a game. And I still don't think United boss a game. I still find it weird now, Roy, watching Man United at home and teams going there with a belief that they can win that game. It's like an old hangover from 5 years ago. You still can't believe teams are going there and getting results. And yet they're doing it consistently under Ten Hag's reign. That's the biggest red flag to me. When you can't get your home form correct, when you're a big, big club, that is it's a massive red flag that they can't get that right. And I don't think at this point, there's a massive rebuild needed. So whether Ineos come in and Jim and all the rest, and they give them the resources to rebuild it themselves, someone's going to have to do it. But the question is, do they feel that he's the man? And if it's me, as a rival, I'm saying I hope he stays another year or two. So yeah, that's kind of answers the question.
And when you look at that, the possession, because he's been built as a manager who comes in, he likes that style, that kind of possession style. He didn't come in as a counter-attacking manager. I look at some of the Champions League games here. Bayern Munich did 41% of the possession. Copenhagen, 50%. Copenhagen again, 48%. Galatasaray, 43%. Munich, 41%. There's only one game, which was Galatasaray at home, where they had 55%. So out of their six games in the Champions League, they gave away possession for the majority of it. So that doesn't seem to be someone who is a possession-based and a forward sort of thinking-based coach. Very much a counter-attacking coach who hasn't really got that right.
And I think Roy Solskjaer kind of put that blueprint down. Solskjaer played very counter-attacking as well, and they didn't dominate possession. They were probably a little bit more direct maybe, and they got some good results for a period of time. But I'm looking at the stats from yesterday against Burnley. Like, Burnley is 53% of the possession. Now look, possession is 9/10 of the law, but it doesn't mean you're going to win the game. Well, I think if you're going to dominate teams at home, if you want to get up the league into the top four spots, and if you want to be challenging for the league, you look at Arsenal City this year in particular. Don't even mind Liverpool. Arsenal City are the real deal this year. And they dominate teams. They pin them in. They wear them down. And that's their game plan. And they build on it. And they bring in players that allows you to do that in the opponent's final third. And Man United are absolutely miles off getting to that stature where they can be challenging for a title and dominating games. So do I have any evidence that Ten Hag has the players or the guys he's brought in? You can call it recruitment. They just don't have it. They're miles behind. So someone's going to have to come in and rebuild. So the question is Radcliffe and all going to go, right, we're going to bring in this manager. This is the way he plays. And now we need to give him five or six pieces of the puzzle to allow him to play like that with this team. And we're going to invest in this over a 2 or 3 year period to get to where they want to be. And if you listen to the kind of the noise that Neville and a few of them are playing, and I mean, Neville is a massive influence on Man United and Sky in general and the sporting scene because he has a voice to millions. He's even insinuating that, you know, United better not get left behind. There's a lot of clubs looking for managers this summer. I really hope they're going to make up their mind. In other words, he's nearly enticing them to move Ten Hag on if they're going to get a guy in now and start planning for the summer. But someone needs to find them five pieces of the puzzle and someone needs to decide whether it's Ten Hag or a new guy. And again, if it was my club, if I'm Jim Radcliffe and I've got all these resources and all this, you know, coming down the line, the infrastructure, I would be moving them on and finding someone that can rebuild it from scratch.
Dave, does it make sense that you have new people in charge? You have new employees in left, right and centre covering all bases. So new employees overlooking the football aspect of it. Does it make sense then for Radcliffe to bring in his own manager?
It's the most likely and potentially the one that makes the most sense because it could be a strange dynamic for Ten Hag to have not just Wilcox and... Is it Ashworth? Is that his name? I keep thinking of Richard Ashcroft instead of it. Yeah. And then you've got the likes of Radcliffe, who know, and then David Brailsford is in there. Everyone forgets, but he's a bit of a guy who sits in the background, and I'm sure he has a say as well. So, you know, Ten Hag, it might be a struggle with that dynamic, but the fact that everything new is coming in and the fact that it's not going well for United, and, you know, they need to be looking at Spurs and Villa first before they even start thinking about Liverpool. And yeah. then there's the next group, which is City and Arsenal. So they probably need to maybe, that's where they are at the moment. And it might be a bit of a job too big for them. You never know. And it just looks like everything's pointing towards everything's going to be new. This is a new United. This is a new era. Let's try and wash away everything that was there before and let's see what we can do.
Yeah. One way or the other, we won't have a choice in it. One way or the other, the fans won't have a choice in it at the moment. It'll be a decision that's made by Radcliffe and those around them. Okay. Liverpool looks like they, and barring something absolutely amazing, they're out of the Premier League race. First of all, Dave, for Liverpool fans, that's gutting. For Jurgen Klopp, it's gutting. But now we're starting to see a few cracks with Mo Salah and Klopp having a little bit of a touchline fallout. Is it something now that Liverpool fans just want the season to be over? And how does it make you feel about what's going to happen during the summer?
Yeah, it's like, you know, just briefly, like, obviously Klopp announces it and we all worry that that's it now. Are they all going to, a bit like Ferguson back then? But then with the whole kid situation and that little 6 week, 2 month spell afterwards, and they maintained where they were, if not improved, that you're going, shit, with all the first teamers coming back, I think we have a chance. And you're thinking, right, Glenn, this is all looking good. And everything was looking good. But I have to, like, in good as in we're going to be in the mix. But yeah, Wednesday was the first day I felt what we maybe feared back in January, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Once the Europa League went, and obviously the dropping of the points, it was just the fact that Liverpool didn't match the fight of Everton. Like, if everyone and the mother know, I joked about it last week, but I didn't joke about it really. Of course Everton were going to show up in the last Mersey derby in Goodison, and they should have been built for that. And they said, right, our normal game mightn't work today, we might have to just battle with them. And they didn't want to.
And it was still relegation, you know, it was in exactly. Everton's face, so it wasn't, they had nothing to play yeah. for.
But, like, they're scousers as well, and we always shy talk about the atmosphere. Of course, Everton were going to bring it as well, and they'd no option but to match the fans as well. It was obvious what they were going to show up and what Liverpool needed to do. You look at today, Arsenal were the amazing. You could debate about that, but they got the job done. That's what matters. The performances go out the window at this time of the season, and Liverpool just didn't feel like it. But even the way Klopp talked afterwards, it was like, even he's like, yeah, even I want it over now at this stage. And then, of course, it was the icing on the cake yesterday where, for whatever reason, whether we find out or not, I don't know. But to see them going at it, which is something you never really see at Liverpool. I know Salah and Mane had a bit of a spat one time, but the only reason I remember that is because it's the only one I remember. You know what I mean? Because Liverpool have always been fairly harmonious to get on. So the band has been split up, of which there's no denying. Neil put it up in the text that it could be up to 40 staff. So, you know, people don't like change, and yeah, people may be getting bitchy now. And me as a fan, it's like, yeah, the Champions League is in the bag now because we've enough of a goal difference. Mm-hmm. We've about 26 goal difference, enough to ourselves and Spurs. So we just need a point just to be 100% certain. But it's job done. But at this stage now, it's like, yeah, just wrap it up and let's get out of here. And let's hope this guy with the mixture of your Edwards and Richard Hughes that they might be able to maintain the best of the rest for next year, and maybe in a year or two we can go at the other two.
Yeah,
and it's not that kind of demise that a lot of Manx certainly want, and obviously we fear might come, but hopefully it won't.
Neil, what does the Salah and Klopp situation tell us? I know we don't exactly know what's going on, but is it just, I suppose, when you are a manager, Klopp said it before, the first 11 love you, the substitute, you know, they all think you're okay, but anyone else out of that, then, you know, they're falling out with you, they don't like you. It's kind of the thing is, Klopp never really sort of had Salah on the bench here and there, and you know, when things are going good. But this is one of these occasions where Salah's kind of on a low. He's not doing the stuff that he has normally been doing. And maybe he feels that he's been made a scapegoat or something along those lines when he felt he should have been playing in this game. is it just showing a bit of frustration, do you think? Or I really can't see that there'll be too much more to it.
I tell you what, well, in my opinion, it is, Roy. It's like Klopp is, he's a terrible loser and he's a winner. He wants to win and it's written all over his profile, written all over his face. He's one of these managers, carries his heart in his sleeve. You know his emotions. When Liverpool lose and he comes out and he goes, we've lost, and you can feel the devastation. He's a terrible loser. And I've no problem with that, by the way, because, you know, it's a trait that's obviously served him well. And what's happened now is you've got Salah, who's the ultimate professional. He's driven like no other player. He's a winner. And the two of them now have got to the point where, unfortunately, they just decided to cross each other's hairs and go, right, something's gone wrong here. And they had a little bit of a moment, I call it. The downside was there was never ever, as Dave said there, it was pure harmony for the last X and of years with them. Mm. There was never an issue with Klopp and any player. You know, if you ran foul of Klopp, you were going out of the club. So for it just happens, it had to be Salah. And that, I think, hurts a little bit. That my fear is that it would go any further and it would sour what should be a really, really good ending, if you know what I mean. It should be an ending that you walk away into the sunset and everyone, you know, kind of unanimously goes, look, that was the Klopp team. Salah was his crown jewel. And they achieve so much together and life goes on. And it just feels a little tainted now. And that is just that little fudge on the kind of legacy that we don't want to see. And I read a load of forums today and there was guys kind of going in, putting in, you know, Mo Salah appreciation posts. But seemingly there was a load of backlash. You know, you had the Klopp side and the Salah side, obviously. But Salah was getting a little bit, you know, he's fallen off the cliff. He's been playing terrible the last while. He should shut up and get on with the bloody game. Where these are just two ultimate professionals that Salah wants to be on that pitch. That's what I would say it was. Salah didn't want to come on with 12 minutes to go. Salah wanted to come on minimum half hour. He wants to start every game. And Klopp had to make a big decision, and it is a whopper decision when it comes to Mo Salah. As you said there, Klopp would always leave Salah last to come off that pitch. He would put someone on the right wing. He'd move Salah in as the centre forward, even for 5-10 minutes, to make him kind of feel, listen, Mo, I tried everything, didn't work for you on the wing, put you up front. He would always be the last to come off. The difference is this year you have Gakpo, you have Jota, you have four attackers, so he had that luxury of being able to move it around. But Salah, he has fallen off the cliff. He's been really, really poor. It's just sad that it happened at this point where there's only a handful of games left and Klopp felt, oh, I'm going to have to pull him out of the limelight. So Klopp made the ballsy decision, I think one that he kind of had to make. Salah wasn't happy with it. Small little spat. But I really, really hope for the legacy, as I call it, that that's it now. It just gets quashed. They get on with it. Salah goes out in the next game, you know, bags a hat-trick, and it's all forgotten and they can ride off into the sunset. But it is this impeding feeling that I really hope nothing else happens now. There's no more drama. They finish out the season and we can say, right, draw a line under that and move on to the next manager and the next kind of phase.
Yeah.
But I have a little sneaking worry in my mind. I just hope it doesn't erupt any further than that.
I hope he's on the bench for the next game. I want to see it. okay, Dave, we look to the future with Liverpool. Arne Slot looks like he's going to be the next Liverpool manager. I was looking up what kind of, I suppose, tactics, what kind of shape that he kind of works with. And it's not too dissimilar to what Klopp is playing. There is the pressing. He doesn't overpress, seemingly. He'll go for the press, but if it's not on, he'll ask them to sit back. I think he plays a 4-2-3-1. Defensively, he'll sit back and have a, you know, 4-5-1 or 4-4-1-1, whatever way you want to call it. So he's not as, I suppose, like Klopp's early teams. He's not going to be pressing and pressing and pressing and constantly be in their face. Yeah. He'll do it in a managed way. What's your thoughts on him being the manager and maybe a change slightly in how they play?
Yeah, look, I can try and pretend, right, but up until Wednesday, I hadn't a clue, and it's going to be very much look it and see. I'm not going to be one of these to pretend. The only thing I'm delighted is I get to say year to BZ a few times because I just love saying that word instead of Dutch League. It's just a great word. You know, the only thing I'd say about it, regardless of him for a minute, it's just Klopp was one of the main men. He was the main man that everyone and their mother wanted. And it's just a little bit worrying for me that they're going after people like Amorim, who is the third wheel of Spartan Lisbon between Porto and Benfica. Feyenoord are the third wheel. Now, I know technically that's where we are, but it's a bit interesting that's why they're going for these types of people. You know, a bit like Alonso, you know, technically, and they've upset the apple cart with the two big boys. Because is that what we're classing Arsenal and Man City? So I'm just wondering where that's coming from more so. Like, I know there isn't a top brass guy that you can really say he's the number one, we have to go get him, compared to Klopp. But look, there's a lot of, you know, I always go on to BBC almost immediately because they'll always get the Dutch guy from the press or their media, and he'll give you a bit of an insight, just like I did when Klopp took over. And they're very much saying he's a very likeable guy, the kind of guy that more than likely the fans will probably want, because in Liverpool we seem to be a bit more obsessed with our connection with our manager than others, you know, as in he's our number one before the players, you know, that kind of thing. So it looks like he kind of ticks that box in terms of the type of guy he is. But you know, it's going to be a very interesting situation. You've got two new guys in the background who are going to help them with the recruitment side of things. How many are going to buy into it that are already there compared to be, like, you know, potentially, hopefully now with the way it's going, maybe a lot of the players might be glad where a change is going to come, and it's probably a good thing because even Klopp looked a bit faded. But I don't know with the guy. The fact that he's been able to put it up to the other two and obviously win the cup and then he won the league, as you said, he seems to like, he likes being on the ball, he likes the kind of stereotypical Dutch kind of thing. Apparently he's very obsessed with the way Guardiola goes about his business at Man City, and he's quite obsessive about it, so he should be well versed on how to put it up to them. So that's the other thing that might be a bit interesting. But you know, it's a bit like anyone coming in off the back of somebody who's going to leave such a mark. It's going to be tough, but by all accounts he wants the job, he's enthusiastic for the job. The fact that he's come out and said it, and now it looks like it's all done, that's a good thing. But let's just wait and see how the cards fall when everyone comes back in July and there's a lot of new faces and potentially a lot of new ideas. It could be a lot of fun and games.
Yeah, well, it's going to be very interesting one way or the other. All eyes are going to be on Liverpool. All eyes will be on their pre-season games as well to see how they play, who they play, and who's still sticking around, which is going to be key. And when we talked about Mo Salah before, is he going to be sticking around? I'm sure he would love him to stick around, but does Mo need something new now? Does he need something to freshen himself up? And
see, the Moneyball guys could kick in and say, we have X amount, but you could have another 100 million, 70 million, 100 million if you gave it to him. You know, they'd be looking at the stats and looking at, we've one or two guys in mind that can replace his numbers if you're up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil, what's your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I go along with that insofar as what Dave is saying. We're kind of waiting to see. And let's be honest, no one really knows. Dutch manager comes in. I don't know. I don't get the warm, fuzzy feeling, I guess, at the moment because we don't know enough about the guy. But what I will say is it could be... I was actually looking at Mourinho. I remember he was in the stand at Fulham last week and they're saying, oh, Mourinho could be the next Liverpool manager. And something just popped into my head when I thought, imagine Mourinho with one of the most attacking teams in the league putting his print on that team, i.e. the defensive side of it, fighting it up, and actually seeing what they could do. It would be an interesting experiment, don't get me wrong. I don't want Mourinho at Liverpool. But I think Slot has an opportunity to go in, and with the two sixes, for example, if he does do two sixes, if he gets the right recruitment and another six in there, because we don't have two sixes at the moment, you only have Endo at the moment. But if he gets that position correct and he tightens up a bit defensively, because let's be honest, Liverpool's season as a whole has been written all over one stat that they've conceded some ridiculous, like 21 times first in the league this year. It's preposterous, like, it's ridiculous. So if he can tighten that side of it up, and bear in mind, he's a lot of decisions to make, i.e. Trent, Virgil, Mo, there's some big decisions before he starts even talking formation. But if he can tighten up defensively and make them a little bit more rigid, he's a lot going for him. As far as going forward, they still have a lot of attacking talent. They still have a good crop of youngsters. I think the base of his side is very, very strong. And it's going to be interesting for me that what way he does it and how he sets about it. Let's hope it's like kind of Unai Emery at Villa, when he took over for Gerrard, he picked up the pieces of a really good squad and just made them better within a period of time. And they look like a machine at the moment. So I'm hoping this guy comes in, picks up the Klopp pieces and goes, yeah, I can make something out of that, and makes them just more formidable. I think the pieces are there. It's just a question of whether this guy can do it. But it'll be exciting and it'll be a change. It'll be good.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it's going to be an interesting time during the summer. Not only Liverpool, there's plenty of teams out there, but especially Liverpool. Dave, the two-horse race, the two teams played today.
Yeah.
Arsenal beat Spurs 3-2, made hard work of it in the end, and Manchester City didn't make hard work of it, as usual. How are you seeing this title race? Arsenal only have three more games, three wins, and they have a good opportunity. We did look at Spurs as being, you know, a tricky one for City. Probably not so much after today.
No, not so much after today. However, this bloody league, you never know, mate, so never say never. You have to keep it interesting. But I just, the closer it gets to the end, the more you're going, where are City dropping the points? You know, the fact that Forrest didn't even get penalty today, so it was never going to happen if they didn't need to get the obligatory penalty I thought they were going to get. But, look, Arsenal are definitely doing everything right, and that's all they need to be doing, and hope for the best. You can never say never. There's always potentially a dodgy thing. But we've been here before ourselves, or Scousers, the deal. We always think we win our next four, we'd be grand. They're going to drop points somewhere, and they never do. It could easily be that case again today, and Arsenal are just going to have to take their medicine and say, unlucky, we done. There's nothing we can say. We've done everything we could. Even the Villa game, there's no point. You know, those type of things happen. But what they've done over the last while, I've seen a stat coming up today, 5-0, 6-0, 4-0. These are all their last six away games, apart from the draw against Man City, which was nil-all. Incredible result. But, the Spurs game, I think it was the one we were hanging our hat on. But after today, and I'm just going to bring it up because we're Irish, so we're allowed. Why on earth did anyone not mention James Maddison and some of his shite that he did today, and his diving and his theatric? Not a sticky word about it.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure. Again,
absolutely, Scott. And Gary Neville's there, by the way. Mr. Protect the Brand and Mr. Protect the English. Not a dicky board of it. But I guarantee if he was another, I'd say if Odegaard had done the same, it would have been a topic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They do overlook certain players. But just to go on the whole Spurs thing, Dave, before we get back to Manchester City, they're very open, but the goals didn't come from generally open play. As Neil was saying, with the Arsenal game and with this game, set pieces are a big thing at the moment.
Yeah, that kind of, it's kind of like that front post and two or three of them attack it, and either you can get the goal, which they did, or they get the OG, which they did. It was causing mayhem, and it was brilliant. And I love the way they kept at it. You know, like when somebody gets the long throw, and let's keep putting the pressure on them. And, you know, it was it's very well drilled and very well oiled, and it just goes to show you how important they are. And then, of course, you see City pretty much scoring the exact same corner as well. It was fascinating. But, you're dead right in saying that with Spurs and how open they are. I'd be shocked if City don't get their just reward and get their few goals, and it might be a bit of a similar scenario for them. But, as much as we will praise your Arsenal and City for how well they play, it's every aspect of the game. Like, they're up at the top for a reason, because they do the homework. I think Liverpool were something similar a year or two ago. They scored the most set-piece goals. Like, the teams at the top do everything at the best. And if you look at teams, that's pretty much whoever's up at the top of the table. They're pretty much up on top of the stats in everything. And it's the same with set pieces. The reason why they're up there is because they do everything better than everybody else.
Yeah. Neil, who do you want to win the league, Arsenal or Manchester City?
It doesn't really matter who I want, right? City are going to do what City do. I can't believe they're going to do it again. And we're going to be sitting here. We're going to be sitting here in 4 to 6 weeks, and Arsenal are after falling for that trap that Liverpool did a couple of years ago when we had City on New Year's and we couldn't beat them, and then they got ahead of us. And then they just kept that point for the rest of mankind. And they're doing it again. They're so good at getting out in front and then just no panic and dismantling teams, which we did to Forest today. It was a walk in the park for them. I don't know whether there's a sticky game in it for City. It would be so refreshing if they slipped up for once, because it would give everybody else just a glimmer of hope. But I just don't see it. They're just a machine, and they got to be applauded for it. But it wouldn't bother me to see Arsenal win it. I just don't think that they will.
Would you City like to see Mikel Arteta lift it up?
I actually don't know. I don't really care either or. City's probably just as easy going, yeah, they won it again, and they have 115 charges, and who cares anyway? I don't know whether I could stomach Arteta lifting it. It could be tough.
I was thinking about it today going, who would I put up with more? I was struggling to come up with an answer. I'm still a bit on the fence about it, because one minute I'm Arsenal, and then I'm like, no, I can't look at it. I can't look at Arteta. And then it's like, City though. I'm used to it now, so maybe I'm more immune to them. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Right. We'll agree that we don't want any of them to win. I'd like to see Arsenal win it rather than City, because it doesn't really bother me if Arsenal win it or not. You know, it's someone different.
Yeah,
you know, and City have enough medals and stuff like that. So I'd like to see Arsenal pip it. If they don't, it's not going to be the end of my world or anything like that. So it doesn't really make a difference.
It kind of went under the radar the other day, but your man Masters from the Premier League has said it is coming soon.
Yeah,
but he still didn't give a effing date. So come on, like, everyone else is getting done and redone, and apparently Leicester are going to be minus whatever. So will you hurry up and make your mind up and let them away with it, or kick them out into the National League and hurry up?
Okay, listen, we're going to finish it on one thing, because we've seen something during the week where it was Charlie McGrew appeared on the Scottish podcast Open Goal. Neil, he was talking about Evan Ferguson and how he's struggled for goals lately, and he said he's not surprised by how De Zerbi has used them in his training sessions. He said that basically they have two teams. They put two teams out, and one defends like the opposition, and the others go attacking them. And Evan Ferguson seems to be in this team that's defending all the time and not really getting much shooting practice.
Yeah. It just shows, Roy, the difference a year makes in any, be it League of Ireland, be it Premier League. It can be a long, long time, and things can happen so quick. This time last year, you had bloody Alan Shearer. You had Lineker coming out saying Ferguson's the next Harry Kane. Take a punt on him. Build a team around him. He's a smashing player. He's going to be the next big thing, 100 million. And here we are now. We can't get into the team. Gets very limited minutes. It's just not happening for him. I think if you looked at him in the last Ireland game, it was like he was carrying a horse on his shoulder with the weight of expectation and fluffed the penalty. And it's going badly wrong at the moment. And it's what we all feared. You know, we had a couple of Irish stars beginning to break through, and they just don't seem to be able to keep going and keep going. And Ferguson now, judging by that comment, has definitely fallen out of favour. And if he trains like that, as in he's the opposition for the setup on the Saturday or whatever, it doesn't bode well. At the end of the day, when you're a young player like that, you need the manager to show the support, the arm around the shoulder. You need the belief of the manager that you're the number one guy and he's going to get something out of you. Danny Welbeck, who, you know, has fallen from a height but yet has landed at Brighton, is in ahead of him. Joe Pedro gets in ahead of him consistently. Fatty gets in ahead of him. Like, he's way down the pecking order this year. I think we said it ourselves about 3-4 months ago that it's a little bit worrying. He gets 20 minutes not seen, and it just seems to be coming to fruition now, and that kind of confirms he's fallen out of favour. And teams like Brighton, the way they keep bringing in these young talents and they play them, and, you know, these kids get their chance, he's fallen out of pecking order, and God knows what's going to happen. It could mean that he needs to move away. He might need another manager that has a bit more faith in him. But from a purely Irish perspective, he's a great prospect. And I really hope he can get his career back on track over the summer and then into next year. But it is very worrying.
Yeah, no, it's really worrying news, because it's such potential there, especially from an Irish point of view, but such potential there to be wasting like that. And there's a lot of questions around De Zerbi now, and obviously how they finished this second half of the season, and maybe some fallouts that has been discussed surrounding all of this. So it'd be very interesting to see how he does get on during the summer. But Dave, would you think, as Neil said, 100 million and all that was quoted, is this a good opportunity for a club to go in and chance their arm and see if they get him for obviously a little bit less than that?
Oh, they definitely could, provided they obviously want him without a shadow of a doubt. Ironically, there was another Irish lad up front for Brighton today in Marco Mani, so we might be saying Evan who if he gets his finger out. But look, it's whatever's happened there. Obviously, he made a comment about him a few months back, so maybe he's not convinced and he's made his mind up, and we don't have to agree with it, but you know, if that's the way he is with the match, look, by the sounds of that session, it seems like it's the shadow play type of session part of it, so most strikers aren't going to get, like, I'm only guessing, but most strikers aren't going to get the opportunity to finish it off or anything. That's where another aspect of training is, or when they all go off at a half an hour afterwards, maybe. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. It's a bit of a wasted session for him by the sounds of it, without a doubt. But I presume that's the same for every forward. So I wouldn't be singling, like, obviously we're worried about him, but I'd say it's a bit of an all-round one where it seems to be not a great session for the forwards. But, you know, I've just had a bad feeling for him for the last 6 months or so, and I just feel like, yeah, maybe one step back to maybe go 2 steps forward could be the ideal scenario for him.
Did you not feel that there was a sort of curtailing of the enthusiasm surrounding him from De Zerbi?
Potentially, but fuck it, I'm going to say it. I've been trying to be. I can see it though, unfortunately. I really can, but I don't want to go into it because I don't want to be too negative about it, but I can see it, unfortunately. I'm not 100% convinced. I think he's of the dial and long caliber. I don't think he's going to be even in the Quinn and Aldridge caliber, you know. That's just my instinct from what I see of him. A bit like what Neil said, I do agree maybe he is carrying a hell of a lot of weight in him, because when Ida came on that time, he was completely different. He looked quicker, he looked fitter, he was everywhere. And he wasn't doing anything amazing, but you could see it was night and day. And would I say he is 10 times better of a player than him? Absolutely not. But he did look like it that day. And you're just kind of going, is his form or is his body, like, he picks up a few niggles? Is he just in that awkward phase in kind of his career? I don't know. But I'll be honest with you, I do have an inkling of what level I think he is. And unfortunately, not playing with Brighton is potentially one of them.
Now, the other thing is that he's out now after having his operation. Possibly could have been carrying something for quite a while, and this is
absolutely
down the road.
And it's been like that for about a year, Roy. He's been in for a couple of weeks, and then he's gone for a couple of weeks, and you're just hoping it's not a permanent thing, and maybe there's a little problem, a little bit of growing pain, because that could be a massive factor in it as well. So either way, a bit like what we said before at the start of the year, as long as he's playing is the most important thing, because the more he's playing, the more he's going to improve and be the player we hope he's going to be, you know?
Yeah, okay. So Manchester United, 20 million bid. Get in there. That's we need cover up there. So that's it. So okay. Yeah. Okay, we'll leave it there. Neil, thanks very much. Dave, thanks very much. Thanks very much for you for listening. Season's closing in and it looks like it's down to 2.